Today on Classical Conversations, we're joined by one of the most respected figures in the classical guitar world, that would be Nicholas Galousis, a celebrated performer, recording artist, longtime professor at Eastman School of Music. He's recently released a new album called Across the Horizon, which is a deeply personal recording that reflects on a lifetime of music making, exploring sound, color, and connection across time and culture. Nicholas, welcome to FM 91.
Thank you, Brad. Pleasure to be here with you.
So let's start with the title of your album, Across the Horizon. What was the meaning behind that title?
There's a number of them. The most important one is that, life went by awfully fast. And I'm still loving every moment of what I do, and I intend to keep going. But I feel like I'm crossing some kind of a horizon, just personally. I keep a sailboat on Lake Ontario, and I'm always looking out across the lake toward Canada. And so that was one of them. And one of the pieces on this recording, Steely by Philip Houghton, an Australian composer. A Steely is a Mediterranean monument. It's actually, they're riddled all across the Mediterranean. And they're kind of monuments to lost souls out in the in the Mediterranean, sailors who have perished, Greek sailors and the like. And I'm Greek. And so, for me, those steles, and one in particular, is of a Greek sailor with his head in his hands, kind of looking out at the horizon. And I love that.
Wow. Well, you mentioned that it'd be a milestone in your journey as a guitarist. You recently celebrated your 70th birthday, I think,
yes,
in April of last year.
Yes. Yep.
And so you're getting ready for a new birthday, I assume.
Yes, I'm expecting a whole bunch of them in this. I'm hoping the 70s to be a good decade. I'm finally figuring out how to play the guitar, and I'm figuring out how to train young artists, and hopefully figuring out a few things about life.
Well, you founded the guitar department at Eastman, which is highly respected, and that was in what year was that? 1993.
Yeah.
Alongside Juilliard and Indiana University at the time. I wonder if you can talk about your collaboration with Bill Dobbins, because you used the Eastman Wind Ensemble in that recording. And did that change your playing at all, or did it affect your playing working with a close colleague like that?
Well, you're talking about two separate pieces. The Dobbins is a solo piece. He did write me a concerto that I premiered with the Rochester Philharmonic many years ago. I think it was around 2005 that he wrote that piece. And I love that piece, but I asked him for a solo piece. And finally, he wrote this Fantasia, which is on this record, that showed up. And yes, working with Bill was a challenge. Just, we'll go back to that in a moment. I just want to say the wind ensemble piece is a concerto for guitar and wind ensemble by Stephen Goss. Goss is an English composer, teaches at University of Surrey, and does a lot of work in London. Very good composer, and in a unique piece because, guitar and wind ensemble is just like David and Goliath. I mean, it's a brutal combination to record. You asked me about working with Bill. He's a brilliant musician. And I've always heard people say that if Bach or Mozart were around today, they'd be jazz musicians. Well, I think they'd be this kind of jazz musician. He is extremely facile in his composition. He's an elegant player. And he's basically written me a beautiful tour de force for guitar, kind of in the jazz style. There's a jazz waltz in there. There's a slow movement, which is highly rhapsodic and nostalgic, almost like a slow movement of Piazzolla. And then a brilliant rondo at the end. In between all of those, there's these wild cadenzas. I don't improvise, but he wrote out something that would, if I do my job right, would sound improvisatory.
Yeah. Tell us about the color machine that is your guitar, and about your guitar specifically.
Yeah, this guitar was built in 2005 by Matthias Dahmann. I had asked him for an instrument, and he finally had one for me. And I went to Munich to spend a few days with him to get it adjusted just right. And it's been the only guitar I've played since 2005. kind of a new construction. It looks like a very traditional instrument on the to the eye. But guitar has always suffered from being a fairly quiet instrument compared to everybody else. And he's figured out a way to maintain a beautiful traditional sound, because they can make loud guitars, but they lose their, the elegance and the beauty. And he's figured out a way to keep the sound beautiful and robust and resonant, and yet still have quite a bit more volume. So I play this guitar, and it's been every recording, every lesson that I've taught, every concert that I've played on this guitar since 2005. I sincerely love it.
Wow. Well, I mentioned the color machine aspect of your playing. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about the challenges and the rewards of giving a piece a different color, right?
I mean, that goes back to, in modern times, goes back to Andrés Segovia. So Segovia was the great Spanish virtuoso in the early part of the 20th century that really redefined what it means to be a modern day classical guitarist. He was managed by the great Saul Hurock, and he was in that small group of people, kind of like what Casals was for the cello, he was for the guitar. And part of what Segovia wanted to always do was, well, he was kind of the only guitarist with a mission statement. He wanted to create a repertoire by composers, not necessarily guitarist composers, which was the primary number of pieces that are written. Had been written by guitarists, because it's very difficult to write for the guitar unless you kind of know the instrument. But he had a lot of people writing for him that were not guitarists, and he was always adapting, and he was on the road and playing concerts that night of different repertoire, but during the day he'd be in his hotel adapting stuff. Kind of a remarkable character that way. And then have the instrument established in major conservatories and universities. And established the instrument in large concert halls. Up until then, it had been always kind of a salon instrument. In order to be able to achieve what he wanted to achieve in a large concert hall, he had to go a little bit over the top. And in one way of doing that was to explore the various colors that the instrument has. If you want a darker sound, if you play two piano on the guitar, people won't hear you. So he created a way of a sort of a pseudo piano, which is dark. But full. He created he explored the ability to play with a very bright sound. Sometimes the guitar is a stringed instrument. Sometimes it's a keyboard instrument, and sometimes it's a guitar. And so guitarists have to explore all those colors.
Well, getting back to Andres Segovia, the first time you saw him was on TV, yeah? Introduced by your dad.
Yeah, well, when I was a boy, I remember watching the Ed Sullivan Show with my father. We saw the Beatles, and I thought that was the best. And it was. I mean, it was kind of a big thing. And then I think it was shortly after that. I don't know if it was very shortly after, maybe the next season. So I badgered my father for an electric guitar, and he got me one. And so, that's what I did at first. And then I saw Segovia, and there was no music to speak of in my house, but I thought it was the most beautiful thing I had ever heard. And so I said to my dad, "What's this?" And he said, "Well, that's a real musician." So the gauntlet had been thrown down. Living in Rhode Island, it was hard to find a teacher. So I kind of was on my own for a little while trying to read the right materials. And fortunately, I had access to pretty good material. And then I finally started studying with various teachers in Boston and Hartford, and then I went to New York when I was 19, and kind
Well,
of got going.
you've taught so many guitarists. I wonder if you can talk about how that has affected you, perhaps as a teacher working with young guitarists. Did you pick up anything from them, and as a person in general?
Well, I don't believe in one size fits all teaching. I really believe in customized teaching, and everyone's unique and everyone is different. And the guitar, doesn't have a bow between your hand and the strings. It doesn't have, like on the piano, it doesn't have a mechanism between your fingers and the strings. It's fingers on strings. So it's always a deeply personal approach to each guitarist. And everybody has strengths and everybody has weaknesses. My job's to identify the weaknesses and to work with them to overcome those weaknesses while still you work on you put your best foot forward in performance, you work on the one that's lagging behind in the practice room. But the big honor of my professional life has gone on later when I see them and they're in their careers many years later. And they've thrived. But I still see my fingerprints on them. I still see the seeds that I'm mixing my metaphors. I still see the seeds that I planted. And it's just, an incredible, incredibly enriching feeling to see that it worked and they nurtured it and took it even further.
That's great. As we conclude, let's get back to the album a little bit, Across the Horizon, because you also have music on here that would be by composers that are considered to be part of the standard repertoire, like Astor Piazzolla and Aitor Villalobos. I wonder if you can talk about the balance between old works and older works and newer works, and how did you decide what would be on the album?
Well, the Piazzolla pieces, the cinco piezas, are not often played. And he wrote four great masterworks toward the last few years of his life. The cinco piezas, five solo pieces, they're kind of all tangos. And three other works, one for two guitars, one for guitar and bandoneon and orchestra, and one for flute and guitar. But, he studied with Boulanger. She said to him, when you... Ken, now it's time to go back to Buenos Aires and do for the tango what Chopin did for the mazurka. And so I fell in love with these pieces. I think they're exquisite. So that was for sure going to be on the record. In fact, it was the first thing I knew I wanted to put on it. And I wanted to pair it with the five preludes of Villalobos because I think that he was a revolutionary in the middle of the 20th century. Five preludes, cinco piezas, it's kind of a bookends. Of course, I wanted to put Dobbins's piece. It needed to get recorded. I needed for people to hear it. I think it's a masterwork. Mm-hmm. I played the Gauss Concerto in Glasgow, and he was there. And it's an extraordinary piece. I mean, I think it is one of the most beautiful, colorful, exciting, difficult, but beautiful pieces written. And then, as T.S. Eliot said, after any long journey, you want to return home and know the place. For the first time. So I ended with a piece by Andrew York, California composer, called Home, which I think is just an exquisite piece. And I love his music.
Well, he's also a guitarist, we should mention. So he's a colleague of yours. You mentioned, people writing for the guitar and they really have to know the instrument. I think that Andrew York definitely knows his instrument, right?
Yes. Yeah, he's a very good guitarist. He played with the Los Angeles Guitar Quartet for many years. Yeah. And his compositions are so beautifully made for the guitar. It's a pleasure to play his music.
Well, we'll link to all of the information in this interview. Thank you, Nicholas Galousis, for talking about your new album, Across the Horizon, which is out now from Albany Records /Parma Recordings. And you can find it on our website at WDTE.org. Nicholas Galousis, thank you so much for talking about your new album today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure, and I hope that all continues to go well for all of us.